The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
They say family more times than like a Fast and
Furious.
Yeah, they sure do. Holy
they
crap.
Do.
Welcome to Sincast, presented by CinemaSins.
All right, everybody, welcome to the Sincast. This is Chris Atkinson from CinemaSins, joined as always by the voice of CinemaSins, Jeremy Scott.
Hey!
Hey! And from Music Video Sins, Barrett Sher.
Hello!
Today we're going to be doing a mini-pod.
Mini-pod!
Ooh, Bohemipod.
This is our first mini-pod in a long time.
It is, and it's mostly due to the fact that our Patreon members have voted on this mini pod.
That's right.
And they ended up voting for Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
And I think that's just strange.
It is strange. Guys, we were all surprised by that.
Yeah, you guys are weird. And all the movies that we put down there.
Like, wasn't Venom one of them?
No, I think they were all November movies. Oh, so it was Bohemian Rhapsody. They had Fantastic Beasts in there. Yeah, a lot of stuff that would garner huge interest. Although Bohemian Rhapsody, let's face it, the movie's made $100 million since its release.
That's pretty amazing. I just read this morning that the soundtrack is shot to number 3 on the charts.
Are you serious?
Yeah, and the Greatest Hits Queen albums Volume 1 and 2 has gone to number 9.
Those are badass.
All because of the movie's popularity. Think about this. Think about Bohemian Rhapsody, the song. It's on like its 4th. Or 5th life. It's basically a cat.
Yeah.
Bohemian Rhapsody.
286 million worldwide.
Jesus. That's impressive.
Yeah. I mean, there was no way that they were predicting that. I mean,
No. There's no way they were. And it's pretty shocking to me, but anyway, I think we can do this because it's a biopic. We don't have to worry about spoilers.
Right.
Right. Like, he gets AIDS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
He dies.
Yep.
He does a concert at Live Aid.
Right.
I think that's
they
out
record
there.
Some albums. None of this is, like, spoiler territory.
Yeah, no. So I don't think we need to worry about that. We don't need to divide this mini-pod up into spoiler, non-spoiler. Bohemian Rhapsody goes about its business just like any other biopic does.
Mm-hmm.
This is how they started. This is what they... This is how they came to prominence. This is a story about how that happened. And in the end, I saw nothing special about this movie. And plus, the fact is that that description that I just mentioned, they skip over so much to me. Like, I don't know the story. Like, I don't know the story of Queen, like the back of my hand or anything. I haven't read 500 biographies or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But when I say... You see their rise to prominence. Like, no, not really.
you see
them join. Like, you see Freddie Mercury join. Then a year later, they're like up and coming. Then suddenly, they've got a recording contract.
Yeah.
And before you know it, they're trying to pitch Mike Myers on Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're talking about Killer Queen in the past tense, even though, like, we didn't get to see, like,
can't write another Killer Queen. And I'm like, well, why didn't you give me 15 minutes of writing Killer Queen?
Exactly. Yeah. It was played over a montage, and that was it.
What I took away from this viewing of the movie is that they kept cutting away when I wanted them to stay,
mm-hmm.
and they wouldn't cut away when I wanted them to go away. And there's parts in this where like you're seeing the creative process behind Bohemian Rhapsody, but all we really see is them all doing Galileo, and that's a funny funny moment and everything. But there has to be more to making that song than, it was kind of funny that day when everybody was trying to hit their Galileos that one day. And that's all they talk about, and they go on. They do the next thing.
And they've named the entire film after that song.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, if my one takeaway is it definitely feels like a movie that lost its director halfway through.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Sure.
And I think it has some peaks mm-hmm. that really work for me. I think, how do we say this guy's name? Is it Rami or Rami Malek?
I think it's Rami Malek.
Rami Malek. He's great.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He looks nothing like Freddie Mercury, and yet at times I forgot
mm-hmm.
he wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the biggest compliment I can pay the movie. There are moments where they show some of the in-studio creative process, particularly with Another One Rides the Bus. Another One Bites the Dust. Almost salvaging a would-be fight
right.
and turning it into creative energy. And I thought that was really cool. But the movie doesn't know what it wants to be. It wants to be a little bit of everything. And so it ends up being a lot of nothing.
Oh, yeah. No, and this is the biggest problem that I had with this movie. I hated this movie, by the way.
Oh, wow. Come out and say I think it. I'm on the highest spectrum here.
Maybe so. All indications were that in all of the different forms that this movie has taken, with Sacha Baron Cohen playing Freddie Mercury and all these directors being attached to it, it's that Brian May and Queen really wanted it to be about the band and not all about Freddie Mercury. This fucking movie is all about Freddie Mercury. And the only bright spots, and there are some, like the ones you were saying, are when the band is involved.
Mm.
And then it'll cut away and it'll show Freddie with his fucking guy pal
mm-hmm.
for like what seems like half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll go back to the band. It starts getting kinetic and all that stuff again. And then it'll throw on the parachutes again. And God, it's frustrating.
Well, and that's the thing. The movie, instead of picking a lane, right? I feel like the movie should have been called Queen.
Yes.
Or the movie should have been called Freddie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you pick either one of those and go hard into it, and it could work like a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
But it tries to be both. It tries to be this tortured artist, genius, Freddie Mercury biopic that is also at the same time, they were family, they were band, they needed each other. And ultimately, you don't really sell me on yeah. either.
They say family more times than like a Fast
and Furious
movie.
Yeah,
they sure do. Holy do. Crap, I didn't even think about that. They do.
And then there's a lot of, I felt like there was a lot of cake and eat it too, kind of, especially, this is like a 2-hour and 15-minute long movie that doesn't have to be anywhere near that long.
No.
We do not need to cut back to Mike Myers hearing the Live Aid concert and feeling shame.
Yes.
We do not need Freddie going the day of the concert to Jim's house, taking Jim to his dad's house so he can get a daddy hug,
yeah.
and then going to Live Aid.
Right.
We don't need to hit every single emotional high moment at the
end.
Oh,
you're not kidding, man, because that beginning sets it up. I was so jazzed for this movie after the first sequence
mm-hmm.
because it shows him getting ready and he's got like his bottle of vodka and his microphone and his pills and all that shit. And it's getting all hyped up before the stage and then walking out onto yeah. Live. I'm getting chills like just describing it.
Yeah.
And then it just fucking tanks.
Yep.
And
let's see what it was like at 16.
Yeah. And I already know some people listening out there are probably like, well, you can't add everything because it would be 4 hours long and whatever. No, we're saying cut out some of this bullshit that's in here.
Yep.
There's a good amount of bullshit, I'd say. 20 to 25 minutes,
fucking
maybe.
Paul, man. All of the Paul
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, we don't need that at all.
No, we get
all.
It. We get it.
And give me like more of the creative process. Give me something with the Under Pressure and how that song
no
got made.
No shit, man.
Give
they
me
just played that shit like over a montage again.
Yeah.
When it's one of like the cultural touchstones of a generation.
Right. The idea that Bowie and Mercury didn't like each other during that whole process, that they sang it in completely different parts of the country, that isn't interesting enough to put in a movie.
Yep.
I also, not that the Queen soundtracks are legendary or anything, but tell me about what's going on with the Flash Gordon soundtrack and what's going on with Highlander.
Yeah,
you know, I want to know the process
yeah.
behind all of that.
Yeah, and then we get this that rainy breakup at the end with Paul. Is it Paul?
Yeah, it's Paul. Fucking Paul.
That is it. 20 minutes, or does it just feel like it's 20 minutes?
Okay, here's the big problem. I think it is somewhere around that. Here's the big problem. So it ends, people say courageously, with them restaging shot for shot the Live Aid show.
Yeah.
Okay. And they play the entirety of the Live Aid show. Of course,
it was. They don't.
They don't.
They don't.
They just two songs they didn't play.
Yeah, there's two songs.
Because I went home and watched the whole thing.
I did too. I watched the whole thing as well.
Meaning that they didn't, in the movie, they didn't perform two songs.
Correct.
That they actually did?
Yes.
Oh, I thought it was a...
No, no.
It's pretty close, but
well,
no.
Well, wait a minute. You mean in the Live Aid, they play two songs that they didn't play in the movie?
Correct.
Yes.
That's
yeah.
what I meant.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I think the first two songs of the movie is exactly what happened
okay.
in the Live
well,
Aid
Well, that
show.
Makes even less sense then.
Yeah.
Because that ending seems like it goes on for
it
a
does.
Long time.
It really does.
Yeah, and, for a reason. Like yeah. oh, we're going to show the whole thing, right?
Which is fine. If you hadn't included all that bullshit before to where my patience is at an end at mm-hmm. this point, I don't want to see shot for shot that entire concert. And then to leave out two songs, but also to make that 20 minutes,
well, and
that
here's
makes
the
even
thing.
Less sense.
If your entire movie is building to this moment, to this concert, please save some money for the CGI of the crowd.
Yeah.
Because there's only two shots that they give us of the crowd in this whole concert.
Yes.
A full wide shot that looks fake as shit that I could mm-hmm. do on a Commodore 64. Or a close-up of eight people.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, I felt like the first 5 minutes of the Live Aid sequence in the movie was thrilling.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was riveted. I was jazzed. I was feeling it. And then it just kind of just keeps going.
I know. You're
going. And they're doing these glory zooms over the top of the crowd. And I'm like, why?
Yeah.
It looks like stuffed animals down there.
That's like the Titanic shots.
I was so disappointed. Like, my brother said, just watch Rattle and Hum and figure out how to shoot a concert.
I know, right?
Like, pay 60,000 extras for one day and do it right.
Yeah. Christ. No kidding. It wouldn't be hard. I don't think it would be hard to get a whole bunch of extras. I mean, at least half of that or something to make it look like that.
Oh, I was so disappointed because it pulls you out of the magic of that moment.
Right, right. Because he does nail it.
He does. And I've seen a comparison video last night, I watched it, of the real Live Aid and Rami Malek's. And he nails it.
Mm-hmm.
He nails it. But that alone does not a good movie make.
I agree.
All right.
I don't know, man. Like, there's so much wasted potential in here because it sets up really, really nicely, and those slow moments become super slow, and it's so cliche. There's like lines of dialogue in here that I literally was just laughing out loud
mm-hmm.
For. One of which was this I think stupid cameo of Mike Myers
mm-hmm.
as the record producer, where he says like there won't ever be kids in cars headbanging to Bohemian
yeah.
Rhapsody when it's an obvious
which of
Wayne's
course
World
you know which of
bullshit.
Course he went on Stephen Colbert and he asked him about that and he's like yeah, I've always wanted to do that where I do something in a movie and then later on I make a joke about it or whatever.
Congrats, Mike.
Yeah, you did
there
it.
There you go.
You did
Yay.
It.
Yay. You're the only one that enjoyed it.
Yeah, he's an amalgamation of a whole bunch of different characters or
yeah.
like people who are poo-pooing the entire Bohemian Rhapsody.
Also, I mean, he's kind of right. Right? This is a band that had one hit album, and they want to pitch this redonkulous sounding thing. This is the second time
yes.
I've said redonkulous in this one podcast. like, from a logic standpoint, he's painted as this ignoramus for not
yeah.
seeing the magic.
Oh, no, you're totally right.
But
yeah.
he was correct. The song comes out and flops and only has popularity as a, like a Second Life kind of thing,
yeah.
right? As a single, the way they thought it was going to take off, the movie even shows you it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that happens a lot, right, where... It's probably that one in a million thing that happens, and everybody latches onto that. Anybody who's creative latches onto that. They were wrong about Queen,
yeah.
or Rolling Stone was wrong about Led Zeppelin, or any of that type of thing. When people do shitty things,
yeah.
and they're like, "Well, they just don't know how good this." I'm hearing right now, by the way, when Halloween came along, and people started. I think it was. A trending topic. Jennifer's body was a trending topic.
Really?
And people were talking about like how everybody reviewed this incorrectly when it came out and everything. I've actually seen Jennifer's body since it came out. I still think it's okay.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think a shrug.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it's great, but you know, a lot of you find some greatness in it. But again, they point to stuff like that where it's like, yeah. Just because everybody in the world hates it now doesn't mean that it's not going to be a classic 10 years from now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway.
So this has gotten generally positive reviews, right?
Yes. Okay. So the this is another one of those big, huge audience versus critics divides.
Right.
The critics have a 62%. It's a 6.2 out of 10. The audience score is 93%, 4.6 out of 5.
See,
what is it?
Well, okay. I'm a huge Queen fan.
Right. Me too.
And I came out of the movie. Don't take this wrong. I'm going to follow this up. I came out of the movie smiling.
Uh huh.
Because I love that music. And the movie sure gave me a lot of that music.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked out knowing I had just seen something very flawed. I it is in one moment magic and the next moment a bad TV movie.
Yes, it is.
But mm-hmm. I still think you can have a good time with it to a certain extent. I think people are enjoying kind of reliving that. You know what I mean?
No, I guess.
These music biopics are always kind of like that to me, right?
Those slow moments just testing my patience too much for me to love it. But, I mean, when you do have those great moments like the We Will Rock You thing in the studio,
yeah.
Which is probably super contrived, and of course it's in the middle of, you know, Freddie Mercury coming in late and all that bullshit, and everybody's angry, but it was still awesome. It was an awesome moment, and I'm just, why don't you give us more of that shit?
Yeah.
And, you know, perfectly encapsulated with everything I hate about this movie was the AO moment in the clinic.
Oh, my God.
Where the fucking kid looks up and is like,
Cancer
AO?
Boy?
Cancer boy. Yeah. Well, he's AIDS boy.
You're right. I'm sorry. Well, he could have cancer.
It's like a Mean Joe Green moment. Remember that Mean Joe Green?
Oh, my God, it is like that. He should have had a Coke in his hand.
Yep.
Everything cheesy and cliche about that fucking movie was in that moment.
Well, and also, cut me if I'm wrong, I'm almost 100% certain he was not diagnosed with AIDS until, like, 87.
Correct. Yeah, that's something that I've found afterwards, is that he didn't know and he didn't share it with the band.
So then,
beforehand,
I'm really kind of frustrated then, if we cared so much about fucking realism,
right,
that we would put in that gotcha, like the audience needs a reason for him to go out and have a good performance.
Right, exactly. They also didn't break up. They actually recorded
an album. That was something, like, I'm like I said, I'm not a well-known Queen expert or anything.
Right.
But that I was like, wait a minute, I never heard about them breaking up ever once.
Yeah.
And I didn't hear about
that. They recorded an album in the span of time that they said that Freddie Mercury had his own contract.
I was doing the calculus in my head. I was like sitting there going, so they did Flash Gordon soundtrack. They did this. Yeah. They did this. They did that. And then they were doing Highlander in 86. Where did they break up again?
Yeah, exactly. And they had been playing shows and stuff like that. So they weren't rusty or any of that stuff. It was just one unnecessary beat. And again, for a movie that's supposedly all about, you know, the realism behind this.
Right.
No, there's no reason for that. Also,
it takes on the cliche that you always hate, right? The breaking everybody up.
Oh my God,
breaking everybody up before the third act.
By the way, I feel bad for him, but that poor Jurassic Park kid is never going to do anything but stand out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
See, I didn't realize. Network, this movie,
that's on HBO. I came out of the theater going, so did you guys catch Joe Mazzello, the guy that played Timmy in Jurassic Park? And he's like, no.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, oh, he played the bassist, man.
Yeah.
He was pretty good.
I'll tell you what, the one takeaway is that everybody in the band is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed all those performances. The dude playing Brian May looks and sounds exactly like Brian May.
Well, and I was going to say, if you ever find yourself watching that video I told you about, of the comparison between Rami Malek and Freddie Mercury, watch Brian May in the movie and on stage, because that fucking actor nailed every moment, every movement. And the guitar work on Queen, to me as a fan, has always been as much of the draw as the singing.
I agree. He's got his own sound.
He really does.
Nobody has ever approached the Brian May sound, both with the distortion, he plays with his fingertips so much. That stuff is fun. And okay, there's a lot of cliche stuff between the bassist, Roger Deakins. It's Deakins something. I don't know. Between him and Freddie Mercury. But yeah, I mean, those dynamics and the way that they interact with each other, like them all, like
bagging on the bassist because he wrote that I'm in love with my car thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's fucking great, man. Yeah. Like, I want more of that.
His name's John Deacon, by the
John
way.
John Deacon.
Yeah. And there's like a pretty decent Swing Street combo.
I know,
here.
Right?
Although the one guy I thought
Sing
was...
Street.
Did I say Swing Street? Yeah. Sing
that's,
Street.
That's a whole different movie.
Yeah, it is. Sing Street. The one guy I thought was in it who played the brother is not in it. But then there's Lucy Boynton, who plays Freddie Mercury's wife for a while. And
she's
then,
pretty.
Yeah, she's very pretty. And she was in Murder on the Orient Express. She played the Countess.
Oh. Yeah, I just caught that the other day, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's her.
I was trying to figure out where I'd seen her.
And, of course, Aidan Gillen, who is in everything, so it's not a surprise whenever he's like...
Him,
you know,
him and Tom Holland are both to show up in... Like, if it's British, one of those fuckers is in that thing.
Yeah, yeah. Tom Hollander's great in this.
I love Tom Hollander.
He's so
good. Everything, but especially, he was really good in this, dude.
Miami. there's some really good performances in here, but overall, and people like Jeremy Simser, who we respect very much for his opinion and everything, love this movie.
He loved it.
So people are seeing things that I am not seeing. I am a rock and roll dude. I love Queen. I'm actually probably out of the three of us the person that likes biopics the best.
Mm-hmm.
Everything about this could have been right up my alley, but God damn, I just got so frustrated with
it. By the way, a side note, has nothing to do with our liking or disliking of the movie, but during the scenes where Freddie Mercury is like, you know, they finally, he's like kissing guys in the movie and everything, I thought there were walkouts. I thought at some point, I thought that, because we, you know, we live in Nashville, Tennessee. I thought that there was going to be a walkout because it was like there was like a person who got up and another guy who went, but they both came back. But it just happened to be during those scenes, so it was like, I knew about this. I'm going to go. This is my time to go to the bathroom.
I could see the bigots in Tennessee going, "Oh, the gay scene. Gotta go get my popcorn."
Why'd they have to show that anyway?
Yeah. I mean, talk about another fucking cliche. I'm going to keep naming all these things. When he's on the phone with his wife. Checking in from the road, and the fucking guy goes in the truck stop bathroom.
Yeah. Why does they...
Okay, come on, dude.
Honestly, I am straight, so I don't know if what I'm about to say is ignorant, but that felt way seedier than it should have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, no,
I mean,
it'd
be the same thing if it were a girl going in or a guy or whatever.
It's not like he's met somebody and's having a good conversation or whatever like that. It's like this like, ooh, there's this backwood, you know, like this, you know, he's a truck driver. He's going to the bathroom, you know.
Almost like they tried to make his gay leanings feel dirty that moment.
Exactly.
And it kind of bothered me.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I also have seen some people talk about the fact that they didn't do enough justice. I've actually seen critiques that they didn't do enough justice to his bisexuality or the gay stuff.
Yeah.
And I've seen opinions that they didn't do enough justice to his heterosexuality.
Yeah. Well, that was something that I saw on, I think it was a VH1 documentary about Queen a few years ago. It was like, there was a guy who, you know, one of those random rock documentary guys comes on. And he's like Freddie Mercury was fucking everything, and like during the time of like, you know, during the early 80s when we first started hearing about the AIDS and everything and whatever, he's like, man, Freddie, who are you sleeping with? And he's like, man, I'm sleeping with everybody or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, like, yeah, they don't do very much justice to that at all.
That's where, like, if this were rated R, they could go further in different places.
Not make $100 million
in
2 weeks.
That's true. I mean, I don't think this really needs to be made rated R, but I'm just saying that there's certain decisions, creative decisions, where... If you just went further or...
feel like Freddie's life was rated R.
Sure.
And, you know, we don't have to... granted, if there are money-making decisions being made as well as storytelling decisions. But, yeah, I just feel like pulled some punches maybe and tried to do too many things at once. And, and yeah, it just fell short.
They got their fucking in there.
Where are we lady? Where are we... where are we letter grading on this bad boy?
I am a solid C on this one.
I'm between a D plus and a C minus. I'm telling you, the biggest sin that this movie has is the wasted potential. And I think even though there are great moments in this,
legitimately great moments. I think the rest of it pulls it down so far that those are wasted. So, yeah. I'm going to say D plus.
Do you think, I'm going to say C plus, B minus. I want to say B minus because I came out smiling, even though it just got so many flaws. I really feel like if I put a B or an A, anything on it, I'm not being real.
Yep.
I need to be real.
Keep it real.
I got to be me. Let's go C plus. C plus, but I think you could enjoy it. Do we think he's going to get nominated for an Oscar?
I think so.
Yeah, I guess depending on like the bulk.
Yeah, it depends on if there's a lot. But I mean, I feel like a performance like this in a movie that's making this much money, it's hard to ignore.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. But I feel like unlike other biopics, like where Jamie Foxx did Ray or Walk the Line, mm-hmm. I don't feel like the rest of the movie around his performance is as good as it was in those cases.
Right.
And I don't even love Ray or Walk the Line.
Well, that's true, but it's... In the past, and I don't have them on the top of my head right now. In the past, people who play real people in this manner that's so good, a lot of times it doesn't matter that the movie itself
yep.
doesn't get that. I mean, who knows? I mean, I don't know what people really think of this with the critics being so far down one way
yeah.
and everybody else being so high on it. So who knows? You could have enough, but. But yeah, I've seen a few instances where like a performance will get singled out of a movie like this, even though the movie itself may not get accolades. So
yeah, he's really good. Yeah. He can really those prosthetics, the teeth were a little bit distracting, but
especially in the beginning, only because maybe Freddie was really like this, but it felt like I was watching the actor adjust
yeah.
to the prosthetics.
Yeah.
The way he kept gumming them and tonguing them. And maybe Freddie did that. Maybe that was a mannerism of his because the teeth were really large in real life. And apparently when they made this movie, they were even bigger at one point and they brought it back down a little bit. It was distracting for a while, but then he's kind of stopped doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not great.
Yeah.
But it was fun doing this mini pod.
It was fun doing this mini pod.
I agree.
and if it means that we're going to be sent to some movies we would otherwise not watch, I'm for it.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I would not have gone straight out to watch this, even though I kind of wanted to see it and everything. I think I could have waited for Blu-ray for this.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that is what we ended up on. Sorry, we probably disappointed 95% of you on this.
But for good reason. We've explained. We've showed our math.
Yeah. So overall, we were sort of C, D, somewhere around there.
I will say, it doesn't feel like a movie you just have to see on a big screen.
No.
If you think you might enjoy it for the performance of Freddie or the music, you probably didn't enjoy it just as much at home on your couch.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't necessarily plunk down the 3D price and popcorn. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of money to spend on a C plus to D plus range movie.
Nah. All right, so that'll do it for this mini pod. Of Bohemian Rhapsody.
Bohemian Pop.
You can go to Facebook, Sincast presented by Cinema Sins, and tell us about what you thought of this review. And you can go to a lot of other places too: SoundCloud, Cinema Sins, Twitter. Jeremy already gets a million hate things anyway. So what's a few more? What's a few more at this point, right?
Yes.
But that'll do it for this mini pod. It's Chris Atkinson, Jeremy Scott, and Barrett Sherr. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening. Comment on our episodes on our SoundCloud page. Check us out on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit. And be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
Took my brother to Adele's just 2 days ago on Sunday for brunch.
I still haven't done that.
They deep fry bacon.
It's gorgeous. That's such a beautiful idea. Jesus Christ.
I saw the movie and 12 trailers.
Was it 12?
I didn't count. It was at least 9.
I think we had probably 10.
If I hadn't ranted about it so many times before, it might have been my rant today because it just gets, it's just fucking exhausting. It's almost like they're taunting you. Like, yeah, we're done with trailers. Nope, here's another one.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, we probably had about 10 trailers before Bohemian Rhapsody.
Mm-hmm.
What do we make of this Battle Angel? Alita, have you seen this trailer?
I saw a trailer a long time ago. It was supposed to be a summer movie, then they moved it to December.
I had never heard of this Battle Angel Alita, but it's Robert Rodriguez and Christoph Waltz.
James Cameron's involved somehow.
Does it look good?
But it looks weird.
It looks, well, the first trailer, which is probably the one you saw, everybody said her eyes were too big, and it was like Uncanny Valley, like problematic. Yeah. So then the next trailer, which was like 2 months ago, had fixed it a bunch. And it looked pretty cool. Then I saw one in the theater yesterday, and it looked like they normalized her eyes even more.
Oh, yeah?
And I'm kind of digging it.
Oh, yeah?
Like,
is it like an Avatar-like presentation?
No.
Isn't everything real?
Everything's live action except her. And she's like some kind of machine, code, human, hybrid. I can't quite tell. It looks like she upgrades at some point in the movie. What my brother said to me literally was, looks better than most of the movies that look like that do.
Yeah. It's very true.
It gives me, gave me vibes of like Final Fantasy. Not that that's a good thing, but with way more action. I don't know. We'll see.
I have a weird, weird, weird feeling about this new Robin Hood.
That it's going to be the like the...
That it's going to be watchable.
Oh, no. No way. There's no way.
I'm just saying. It seems like they're having a little bit of fun here instead of like the super gritty, grimy Russell Crowe version.
But this is a problem I have with where we are in cinema today is that we are, and I'm not blaming you for this because you just said this, but I'm talking about other people who will just blindly forgive a redonkulous fucking movie because at least they were having fun.
Oh, yeah. No, I wouldn't.
Because you know what? They have fun making good movies, too.
They do.
Most often. Sometimes they have sometimes like Revenant, nobody has fun, but a good movie still comes out of it.
We're just going to grit our teeth.
I saw a trailer this morning for Roma.
Uh-huh.
It's the first time I'd seen one.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
No, I've just seen the teaser stuff that they've had.
So Dicer just saw this movie.
Uh-huh.
Went to New York. Netflix flew him out.
Really?
Yes, because he's a critic. We're
is
not.
That why?
So he met Alfonso Cuarón, got to see this movie.
Wow.
They put him up in a hotel overlooking the park.
Wow.
And we have to wait until like December 14th on Netflix, unless there's somehow a showing in Nashville. It's like super limited showings next week in real physical theaters. But it looks, anyway, the trailer. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to talk about or see anything else. I just want Roma in my face.
I do, too.
Right now.
I can't wait for that.
Trailer was awesome. So, but that's not what we're here to discuss today.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we're doing Bohemian Rhapsody. I've got opinions, man.
Me, too. I got opinions. I got rack and pinion steering.
What is it? Farouk Balsura is his real name?
Oh, we're not going to have to pronounce real names.
Farouk
Balsara. Guys, I will not be pronouncing real names today.
Only made
Actually,
up names.
I couldn't even pronounce, like, Gwillem Lee. I don't even know if that's the...
Gwillem Dafoe?
Gwillem Dafoe.
He's great in this movie.
Mm-hmm. He really is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't even recognize him. That's how good, he was.
Gwillem Murphy is Willem Dafoe playing Brian May.
Yes.